I want to thank Mr. Bernstein and the whole group here for inviting me. And I'm going to share with you whatever I can. I have a limited time, only 5 hours, right? Okay, so. Let me start. I was born in Poland. Poland was a major, I would say, place where Jews assembled, driven from all misery. Poland was a population of 3.5 million Jews. About 10% were Jews. And the reason the Jews were invited to come to Poland is to improve the economy. And it was done by Casimir the Great, the king, who claimed that he also had a girlfriend, Esther. What can he do? So, and it's a true story. They say they used to call her not only Esther, but Esterka, a little baby, like Tzipi. Okay? Okay, now, let me start out. I was born in the Jewish sector of Warsaw, the northern part, which was became a very important place of Jewish assembly. I met and I lived with all kinds of Jews, different personalities and different type of communities, groups. There was a lot of activity to help each other because there were not too many rich people. And people produced their bread by doing all kinds of professions. For instance, now if you have to repair a shoe, do you go to a shoemaker? No. You go and you buy a shoe. It's a sale. Over there, sometimes a shoe had to be repaired 3 times to fix. And this was our famous, you know, production. Tailors, all kinds of personalities. And then we go into the intellectual world, in the world of music and theater. This all was represented in Poland by great personalities, Jascha Heifetz, Huberman, and all the great, the famous artist Ilya Shor, and other great people with whom I had the pleasure to meet. Not only be connected in close contact, but I met some of those personalities, including Isaac Bashevis Singer, who was not far from me on 86th Street, and not far from Broadway. I grew up in a family of art and music. I always loved art and music. My father was a musician. He was a yeshiva bochur, born in Lublin, in the famous yeshiva, Yeshiva Chochmei Lublin. But in that time, there was a lot of tears and pleading with God to help financially because there was a lack of bread. And he discovered that he has a talent for music. He became a musician of great importance to such an extent that he was invited to join the Polish Christian Union of Musicians, which was a great respect. Okay. My mother was an artist. She grew up artistically in a home, also a religious home, but she became a magnificent designer for costumes for stage, for performances, for the theatrical world. The beginning of her career was this famous theater in Poland called by Esther Rachel Kamińska, whose grave still exists. Luckily, we can still find graves at the Warsaw Cemetery, and unbelievable that the Germans left the Warsaw Ghetto Cemetery intact to such an extent that a year and a half ago I went with my daughter and 2 grandsons, and I found the graves of my grandfather, Moshe ben Yekutiel Halevi, his father, and my grandmother Esther. It was unbelievable. It was a very, very strange fearful way of going and finding the place, and also some joy that there is an existence. My grandfather was a member of the Chevra Kedisha. He was very active in activities.
Society.
Yeah. Okay, now, we were four children. I was the oldest. Then was Esther, my sister. Then was Pesach, my brother, and the youngest Shlomo Yitzchok, after Rashi. We lived a normal life. My first school was a Hebrew school in Warsaw. It was an obligation to learn the Hebrew alphabet, and to say Moda Ana Lefanecha every morning, not to lose your identity, because we lived in the surrounding of anti-Semitism, not exactly 100%, but to some extent anti-Semitism, and also the influence of the church who claimed that the Jews are the Christ killer. But simple language which I'm repeating. They were also good Christians, and I'll talk about it later. After I graduated the Hebrew school, I was enrolled to a public school. The only man who is still around in this world is a friend with whom I went to the school. He lives here in Jerusalem. It's unbelievable that we found each other. Yeah. Anyhow, from the four of us children, my parents, I am the only survivor. That's heartbreaking, but there was some strength in me to rebuild my life and to create a family, and God helped me. I have great nachat. I have a daughter and a son, and then I'll go on to further talk. And they both of them have beautiful children. There have been big stories about them. They're all good. Mm-hmm. And they're good. And one of them is a political scientist, just graduated. He graduated from Hebrew University in the School of London School of Economics. And he worked for President Obama in the White House. I am proud to say so. Okay. Now, I remained the artist. How? I try to prove to the Christian world that I am talented. Since the age of four, I started drawing. What did I draw? I drew ships and trains. Because they were telling that there's a way of getting to a place called Palestina, which the Goyim, the anti-Semites, kept sending us. Jew, few places, no Palestinian, means to Palestine. And somebody says,
that was the chant of the anti-Semites in Poland in the interwar years, was Jews go to Palestine.
Yes, they gave us an address. So it was not easy to go to Palestine. In 1929, my mother's oldest brother went with his family. By miracle, he made it to the United States with his wife and three children. And this is what brought me later on to the United States. Okay, now, why did I draw the train and the ships? Because they told me the ship will take me to a golden land, the train will take me to another golden land, and we're always dreaming about getting out of hatred, getting out of anti-Semitism, and to go to our place where we belong. It was not easy. Warsaw had all kinds of beautiful groups, working class, intellectuals. You have the Shomer HaTzair, you have Tarbut. I was a member of Jabotinsky group. I dreamed to go with power and conquer and be here. And many other organizations, there was the Bund, there were Jewish communists, everything. Everything was a dream to improve life. You may have liked it, you may have not liked it, but this was the deal. And so life goes on, and I have to add something.
You belong to Beitar as a...
Yes.
Beitar was a youth group of the revisionists.
For a uniform, a brown uniform, don't ask, it looked like a general. Okay, anyhow, I'll make you laugh. I was accepted as a student to study at the one of its kind in Poland, the graphic design school and the graphic industry named after the greatest Polish patriot, Joseph Piłsudski. We were only 4 Jews. I am still around the last survivor. Unfortunately, when the war started, we Jews assembled and they started reminding themselves of the past. World War I, the Germans were pretty good, half Yiddish, half German, you made it with them. But you never expected that what's going to happen is unbelievable, and okay, and I am just trying to tell you about my luck. I was accepted to the school, as I told you a minute ago, to the graphic design, which produced. First of all, you had to learn how to design. The basic design in those days were propaganda posters. The communists have posters, the hammer. The German has posters, the swastika, Yimach Shemom. And the Jews have posters with the Book of David. Go back home. Okay. Now, I was accepted to the school. They were very loyal and very democratic. Except of 2 incidents when I was beaten up by students, classmates. They said, this is not the place for you. Get the hell out of here and look for a better place. But they were later punished, later on, because the director of the school protected me, and there were a number of professors who survived and I met after the war. Very unusual treatment. Now, the art I learned in the school helped me survive. We also learned a lot about German propaganda designs, posters, illustrations, and the German calligraphy. I became an expert in this area, which helped me prove to the Germans that I am not a liar. Because if they picked a Jew who claimed to be a mechanic, a car expert, they made him do the job, and if he said a lie, they just killed him, that's all. That was a risk. I went back to the school to get my diploma, because this was 1939 when I finished the school. I was not permitted to enter the school by the doorman. He said, wait until the director, his name was Stanislav Dombrovsky, a Christian, will come down and talk to you. The director of the school came down and he said, it's an unfortunate situation that you cannot, as a Jew, you cannot enter the school.
This is it's after forbidden. The Germans came into Warsaw?
This was as the Germans came into Warsaw, and it was a very easy moment. Why? After bombing and killing in this motif, when they entered Warsaw, they wanted to prove that they are tzaddikim. They meant good. Okay? So he told me that you cannot. I was devastated. I came home crying. And I said, this is not the story you kept telling us, dear father, about the good Germans, our relationship. Now, the Germans created the following. A kehillah, a council. And the council had to execute their orders. They wanted to prove that they are tzaddikim. And the Jewish council is going to... What were the orders? To assemble Jews daily and march them off to many areas in the territory of Warsaw in order to help bring Warsaw to a clean area after bombarding and after fires and so on. I was lucky to be accepted to a group which was organized by the Jewish Kehillah, and thanks to a friend of mine, whose name I'll never forget. His name was Berle Stilleret, Berle Mizdov Stilleret, who convinced me, my parents, I shouldn't be afraid, and report. When I reported, about 2,000 Jews were marched into different directions to serve German military units. I was assigned to go with the group to the military group, the airfield in Warsaw, which still exists. If you go to Poland, you'll still land on the same plane where I made my career. Over there, I was introduced, the group leader asked us, what is your profession, what is your profession? Many Jews said lies. Okay, good. He was a tailor, so he said he's a mechanic. He's a mechanic, he said he's a galef. He went to make people laugh. But they were introduced to the Germans in a serious way. They said he is a graphic designer, a Jew, a graphic designer, an artist. We will check. The guy opened up the holster and he pointed at the finger. Come with me to my office and prove. I learned the polite way of behavior from Poles and Germans before they were in. And very politely, very nicely, I asked him to give me the initials of his name. He gave me the initials of his name. I'll never forget his name because at times he saved my life, a German. His name was Wilhelm Pomeranke, WP. I came up to the office. He gave me a paper. I had to organize something to make a pen. And I calligraphed his name. And he called in the chief commander of the unit, the military unit, the airfield, to show him that there is a Jew who said the truth. So I became engaged. This career, I'll make it fast, started a career later on where I was introduced to the biggest Jewish murderers in history, the ones who killed 6 million of our people. And my art and my way of behaving with them was an act of an artist, like I would be trained to behave their way, to be polite, accept their beautiful ideas of intelligence, what I should design, how I should design. For instance, I should make a beautiful design for his wife and children in the Heimat. The Heimat means his home, his blessed home. While I am here in the place of dirt and garbage, I have to do what the befehl is, I mean, order. He looked at his crazy hand, blessing his boss, the chief murderer, and he said, I should draw his wife and children standing in front of his beautiful home, waiting for their wonderful innocent daddy. He was the commander of the SS. And then I made a design. He thanked me. He forgot to whom he talked. And I accepted his thank. I said, this is a pleasure for you, sir. And he asked me what I ate. He ordered from the kitchen a magnificent portion of scrambled eggs and toast and milk and coffee. And then he asked me, when did you eat last such a breakfast? I said, I don't complain. I follow orders of the camp. I eat what was given to me. He says, you are a liar because this is something different. I said, yes, sir, this is different. And this was going on and going on. In the meantime, weeks went by. December, the end of December 1939, the order came, I'm climbing in my pocket, to pull out something disastrous. An order that every Jew from the age of 12 has to wear this armband on the right hand. Exactly the way I did it there, it is here. And you have to wear it in such a way, not to bend it and not to hide it, but to keep it open. Otherwise you'll be finished. To be killed were posters all the time. There was not an order without ending. If you don't do this, you'll be dead. Then came another story, which was unbelievable, that we will create an area called in German Das Jiddische Wohnbezirk, or in our simple language, ghetto, where you will be protected from epidemics, from enemies, from hatred. We Germans will treat you the way you deserve. 1940, November the 15th, on Monday evening, the ghetto was closed first with wires and then rapid building with bricks. I was one of them helping build the wall. And then they made a stop of Jews going out from the ghetto to the iron sector until everything will be organized and done the way it should be done. The Jew did not believe.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you went into the ghetto,
yes.
Did you go with the rest of your family?
No, the family had no right to go because I was assigned to work for the airfield. I got a card to be placed on the door, which was a lie, that the family so-and-so is protected. It is not going to any place outside the Jewish Wohnbezirk or the ghetto, because I gave them a contribution, the family is protected. But here starts a big horror: hunger and disease. The Germans said that I'm going to be paid daily for my work, and the Kehillah was paying me, with the rest of the Jews, the equivalent of $3.20 a day, for which you can get just two slices of bread. Anyhow, what did I do to survive? The question. What I did to survive is to make posters announcing the death of Shlomo ben Yitzchak Halevi died, to hang up in front of the building that the funeral will take place at the cemetery. They permitted a number of Jews to follow the casket. Later on, there was no caskets. They were loaded bodies on wagons and dragged them. And this story is magnificent because they used the dead bodies in the caskets to fill up on the iron sector, which the cemetery was across from the iron sector. It was cut off with the iron sector going through. There was a cemetery, the ghetto. And Jews began to smuggle in bread and merchandise, whatever they could, to survive. I was paid just for a few weeks, 2 weeks or so, the salary. Then they said the consul has no money to pay. The $3.20 a day. Imagine, go out and eat now for $3.20 a day, or 3 shekels. Anyhow, the career ended. Why? Because the hunger and the misery in Jewish family was so tremendous that they had to take out the body and put them on the street and cover up with a piece of paper or a rag. And people didn't even know whom they buried. The mass graves, to take these bodies out by a special groups which was permitted by the Germans, a little wagon with two wheels, load the corpses, take them out. Now let's go back to another area where I was very active. Here comes the Joseph Pilsudski school, where I learned the unusual tricks of making very important federal documents. I started with the help, with the advice of a group of people who worked in the underground to produce false documents. False documents consisted of a paper with the name of a church, and not Shlomo Yitzchok, but Stanislav Krakowski, or the other name, is a member of the church. He was baptized. He's a good Catholic. Signed by the priest of the church in a stamp. It helped me at that time, a Christian colleague, who was very devoted to me, and he was making blank copies of the church, which was filled out legally. They made a copy, they improved, they wiped out the names and so on, and they gave me a blank, the name of a church, the area where I can put in the name, and the place for the priest. Okay? I worked with this group, and I was very much scared because they claimed that there are groups who are working with the Gestapo, Jews, traitors. I can be handed over. There were a number of traitors later on. And I worked for some time, and this gave me and my family some support. I could buy a half a bread or a bread. I later got a telephone call from a people in Yerushalayim that they read my book, and in this book they found the name Flasterstein. I call about a dear friend, Flasterstein. When did you see him? Where is he? I told them the last time I saw him is in the death camp Majdanek. I was spared from death because I was selected as a valuable designer, artist for the Germans and a number of other Jews who were technically prepared to do certain jobs. And what happened to my friend Yankee Flasterstein, I don't know. But they came to visit me. They even brought his picture and the picture of his parents. And his parents were wonderful people. He had a little store, a food store. And when I would come in and with my, you know, the Germans gave documents that a Jew has entitled to get bread, but he has to pay for the bread. They had no money. They would go in, whatever money you had, he gave in. You go into a store, he would give you a half a bread instead of a full bread, or a few slices of bread. It was going on an unbelievable criminal act in these stores, and I don't blame them because to survive was a horror. Okay, we all became ill with typhus affected, and somehow we survived. And then came the announcement that there's going to be on July the 22nd, 1942, it was announced with big posters that the Jew has to voluntarily report with the family, taking along 15 kilograms of valuables. Don't forget the money, don't forget the jewelry, don't forget the diamonds. Take everything, you'll get safety to a place where you learn how to be a decent human being, a decent Jew, to be useful to humanity. Now, all the addresses they promised to send you to, we all know the names. I hate to bring up the names. These were the names where all life was taken away from us. And it started out on Tisha B'Av, 1942. And at that time, I got an order to report to the airfield with another group of Jews, close to 100. My dear mother, the Zichrona Livracha, did not believe that I'm going to go out because on the door was hanging the sign that the family is protected by me working for the Germans. My mother escorted me to the place of assembly. Her face was like a face of a skeleton, crying. She put on her black framed glasses. We kissed each other. I went up to this wagon, the transport wagon, and this was the last time I saw. On the way home, she was captured by a Jewish policeman. They engaged the Jewish police with the understanding that by serving the Germans, the Jewish police and family is protected from being sent away. This was the last time I saw my mother. Then came the end of our existence in the Warsaw Ghetto. Close to 400,000 Jews were taken away. And brings back memories of the trains and ships I used to draw. The train which I drew as a child, was the flame which took away our brothers and sisters to the end of their lives. I survived all these events by miracles, by doing artwork. And one of the biggest signs I made for the big casino at the airfield was written in German, but they'll translate it. It says, in the Bible it is written, you should love your enemies. In the Bible is geschrieben, du sollst auch deine Feinde lieben. It's exactly it. You should love. How strange, how miserable, what kind of a meaning, had no meaning to me. Now let me see if we go on further.
Let's see if people have some questions.
Yeah.
Anybody have questions?
Dr. Besh will ask.
Well, this is the first of Pardes.
I have a question.
Speak loud.
Yeah. Could you tell us more about your parents? What did they want for you? How were they religious? What were they like, your parents?
What they want from me is artwork.
Uh-huh.
For instance, to decorate the casino.
Mm-hmm. No, your parents.
What?
Your parents. She wants you to talk about your parents a little bit more.
Oh, about my parents.
Right.
Unfortunately, the career and life of my parents ended right after the Gezerah came out on posters that the Jews have to report voluntarily. Not every Jew reported voluntarily to the place, but they were assembled and driven out from the apartments like animals, with sticks and irons and guns and shooting. I remember when this was going on, when a mother was holding her child, and she was about to run down the steps, they ripped away the child, they threw the child out through the window. They were throwing people through the windows. Most of the people who helped them, the bandits, were Ukrainians, Latvians, Lithuanians, Estonians, who were promised by the Germans freedom, free lands. They have to help them to execute, to finish off the Jew who is the vermin of humanity. Okay.
Can we go back to your parents?
Yes, my father and mother.
No. To go back to what were your parents like religiously? And what do you think they wanted for you in your life?
We had an observant home. Shabbat was observed. We were members of a small chevre called Ahavat Achim. The address, I'll give you the address. The street does not exist anymore. Nanalevki 349. Was a Jewish section, mostly for workers and little businessmen. Okay, Shabbat, of course, we were walking from a street called Pavia Street to the Nalevki Street, about 15, 20 minutes walk, and we met all kinds of people, different trades, different professions. One of the people whom I'll never forget was a person by the name of Brown. He was an artist. He was a painter. And in order to make a living, he couldn't go into a gallery and give me $10,000 for my painting. So what did he do? He made signs for a shoemaker, for a tailor. He would draw a beautiful big shoe and say, Moshe the tailor, and so I'll give you a special price, and so on. My father played in major orchestras. His first career was the Esther Rachel Kaminska Theater. Then he joined the Polish National Theater. They had a deal with a Christian friend who substituted him on Friday evening in Shabbat. It was a deal. And the guy was happy because he needed work, he needed bread. Okay. Our home was a home of hospitality. Many people, actors, artists, a poor tailor, and Duvet the Corban, also a character, I'll describe him, would come up. There was a big kettle on the stove. We didn't have any gas yet, but we burned coal, burning coal, making a soup, whatever soup there was, and put a plate, and the people would, we would save their life from hunger. The many people would come up with a piece of bread in their pocket, black bread, take it out. All he wanted was a little warm water because he had a tea in his pocket. He put in a little tea into the water and said to eat. There were all kinds of personalities, and I learned this, that people who would say, I am hungry, people would say, I ate enough, say the lie, and so on. So my father did an unusual mistress, to tell you about activities. There were weddings, nice weddings. The father was dead, or the mother was dead, or the father was in prison, he was a gunner, okay? They made a wedding, and they needed an orchestra. So my father would go out and ask Chaim, can you help me? What do you need? Yeah, I need a few musicians to celebrate the wedding of so-and-so. They cannot afford to pay for an orchestra. They hardly can afford to pay for bread, to make them simche, simche. Okay, my mother used to do also mitzvahs in the house by helping the hungry. Many people would come up and would really see in their faces that they need a glass of something, a piece of bread or soup. So my sister and brothers grew up in the same relationship. My brother Pesach was born in Pesach, and here I'll start the story. And he died in the uprising, in the Warsaw Ghetto uprising in Pesach. He was the last who was driven with my father, and my father told us, he told me the story, driven to the place of assembly called in German Umschlagplatz, means the place of the assembly. And he managed to disappear suddenly. He lost the part of his family. He was hiding in his cellar with killed people with dead bodies for a few days. By miracle, I entered the ghetto. How? Because the Germans permitted a number of valuable Jews to go into the ghetto and get clothing for the coming cold weather. And by that time, by the chance, I met my mother's brother, Yaakov. He told me, you have a brother, and I told him he meant him. He says, no, your brother Pesach is still alive. He pointed out where, on the same street, and I found him. I managed to get him out to the airfield, but he didn't last long there. He didn't feel good, he became ill, and the order came to transport him back into the ghetto hospital. They created a phony hospital on the street called Gensha Street, number 6. They brought him there. And because I was doing a portrait for the commander of this unit, military unit airfield, he made a telephone call into the hospital. They still had a telephone call, the telephone. And I spoke to my brother, he said to me, dear Moshe, don't worry, we'll be good, we'll meet again. I'll never meet. This was the end during the uprising. The uprising lasted while I was outside the ghetto, kept with a number of over 100 Jews at the airfield in barracks, and I saw this horrible smoke going up to heaven, like I don't want to say it, like God would receive the korban. It was a horrible flare. We asked ourselves, we had observed mostly Jews in the group, and they said, Shema Kolenu. Whoa, what's going to happen to us? After 2.5 weeks, it was on a Sunday, the 9th of May, the order came that all Jews assembled outside the ghetto working for German units will be thrown into the still lasting fire of the burning Warsaw ghetto. And I happened to be one of the people marched to the end, to this Umschlagplatz, to be loaded on trains and driven to Gehenna, I want to know how much time I have. It was an unbelievable miracle that while we Jews, there were the last 40-some thousand Jews in the ghetto left, and they were cleaning out the rest. Many of them got killed. The half of them got burned, killed, because they used to drop in gases into the tunnels, bunkers, wherever they could hide, or fire, or water, poison. And a few survived, including Mark Edelman. Edelman, with a big story written about him. And he died. He became a medical doctor later on. And the train stopped middle of the night. We heard German, Ukrainian, and Polish talking between the train personnel, and we heard some unbelievable orders that cars are being detached. Three cars were detached of the transport which was going to Treblinka, north of Warsaw, and our three cars were detached, were going south, direction Lublin Majdanek. And this was the beginning which led to my survival. Because when I came to these camps, they wanted art and music. And I'll show you some what was going on in the camps here. They liked art, they liked music, they liked different luxuries like clothing or saddles, for the horses, like the horse riding and so on. So what I observed, I had no camera, you know that. I had no computer. Nobody had a computer in those days. But I had a talent in my hand and a memory. If you want to see it, I'll show you the illustrations. Here is a loving picture. When you arrived in a camp, you were usually greeted by the murderer, mass murderer, with beautiful, the beautiful language. Here comes out the director, his name, Yemach Shimon, was Fikes, with a little boy. It seems that this is a grandfather with a grandchild. No. This boy was chosen by this bandit by the name Fikes from a group of 2,000 Jews he killed. He liked the boy and he called him Afe, ape. We used to call him a strawberry, a pink. He made the tailor of the camp dress a uniform, an SS uniform, and he gave the child an order. He said, you pick anybody you like, and they will send them to Gan Eden. It means to pick a Jew, and he'll kill him. This boy was a tzaddik, he survived, and he finished his life in Israel. But by miracle, he survived. This bandit disappeared from the world. Nobody knows what happened to him. They claim he committed suicide. Okay, now. Now, the same bandit, he liked to have a white horse. And the Jews were making all kinds of decorations and saddles for the horse. And before breakfast, he would come into camp, pick a Jew, he says, come over here. He would throw the reins around his neck, send the horse up in gallop, and strangle him to death. The whole camp was assembled here, witnessing. This was the representatives of the Jewish group and Christians. In blacks, these are Ukrainians. Another thing. This is what I photographed in my memory. Here's a story about the German officer, a Jew who served in the German army in World War I. Somehow, fate brought him to our camp, and when they discovered that his name, for instance, his name was Bauchwitz, was an officer in the German army, and because he was a Jewish officer in the German army, the German lost the war in World War I because of Jews like him. So, the order was he has to be hanged. And the whole camp was have to march around and sing. In those days was a Polish popular tango called Marianna. They sing Marianna while this guy gave his life.
This was not in Majdanek, this was in Buzyn.
This was in Buzyn. Buzyn was an Abteilung, a branch of Majdanek. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because Buzyn was the area where Poland produced the biggest amount of armor for the Polish army. The Germans took it over. Now, they found a piece of bread and a golden coin in a Jew's pocket. And they claimed that this piece of bread, which weighed was a few grams, and the little a golden coin I found in the pocket, has to be multiplied by Germans, by the German amount, the German population. He said that it stores thousands of tons and thousands of valuables and so on, and therefore he has to be killed. But he said, to kill a Jew is too costly. You Jews will kill him. And they picked up a group who strangled him to death. Here's the name. Now, the Germans are a people of great culture, science, music, and you know, Beethoven, Strauss, whatever you want to ask. And here, after a day's work of killing, the violinist, a friend of mine, was playing romantic music, classical music, national music, whatever music they want, to please them. This was the head of the camp, and the two Ukrainians, two helpers, on both sides listening. I watched it, I listened to the melody, and everyone had to smile. Now, this is about the end of horror. This, after the war, I was accepted as a student in New York at Pratt Institute. I don't know if you're familiar with the name. In Pratt Institute, I designed a poster, Never Again. What does this poster mean? It says here, 1939-1945. The six people here are about to be shot, and they were killed. I was supposed to be among them. What happened is the following. The camp was divided into companies. A company was divided into groups. A company is 100, a group was 10. If one from a group escaped, the nine got shot immediately. So the one from my group from Warsaw escaped. He was caught in the forest. He managed to get through the electric barbed wire, and they killed him. But then the rest of us nine had to follow the same thing, because we were guilty just with the guy who wanted to escape. At the last moment, I'll never forget the name. His name is Adolf Axmann, a superior bandit from the SS, came over and made a motion to three Jews, the saddle maker, a tailor, and the Kunstmaler, means the artist, out. He says to me, you have time to die later. These three, six Jews were shot. And the poster, I won a prize at the Pratt Institute for designing the poster and the story. I was finally liberated by the Soviet troops, 1945, May the 8th, at 5 o'clock in the morning. We heard a scream, Svoboda means freedom. The German troops marched in, the Russian troops marched in, not the Germans, God forbid. And the head of this camp, called Theresien or Theresienstadt in Czechoslovakia, was the place I was liberated. And then after sitting almost 3 months there, because they had to supervise us, check our health and so on, I got the permit to go back to Poland. Here I am standing on the ruins of my building, the ruins of my life, in Warsaw, that's where I live. Dressed up already like a normal human being by the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee. They helped me a lot. And later on, I never forgot them. And here, here how my street looked. This is how Warsaw looked after the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. And a year later was a Polish uprising against the Germans. And this is how Warsaw looked, ruins. That's where I live. This is the area, more or less. Mm-hmm. I'll hold it up. Later on, I've made a poster, Jewish education needs you, make it your career. American Association for Jewish Education. This is my hand, and this is my son's hand, over a Hebrew book. I did many jobs. I designed a symbol for the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee. I designed a symbol for Ramah School, the Kehillah Jeshurun. I designed a symbol for the United Jewish Appeal in the United States. I designed a symbol for Yad Vashem in the United States. Even a symbol for the women of Reform Judaism in New York. Don't laugh. They want to be Jews. They are Jewish. They want to stick to Judaism. We have the same problem in Israel. We have a breakup of different Jews. Believers, less believers, holy believers, Haredim, and so on. Let them all live together in peace. That's all I want. But what I want to say is the final prayer. Yeah. This is life. I'm looking for something. Okay, now, I am not a great rabbi, I'm not a great tzaddik, I'm an artist. And I finally offer a fervent prayer that shalom, a lasting peace, should prevail, that the word of the prophet Isaiah, should become reality for us survivors of the genocide, for the state of Israel, for all people of the world. Amen. That's all I can say. Now I go become a salesman. The book I published, which has the full history of my life and my survival, is this book here. It was printed by the State University of New York. And then my dear daughter, whose profession is clinical psychology, wrote the book Hiding Places. I designed the cover. Hiding Places is the story of my wife and her parents, Zichronam Livracha, who were hidden by a wonderful Christian Catholic family 16 months under the floor, Tachat HaRitzpah, at the horrible risk of life. And this is the book which my daughter wrote. It's worthwhile reading and learning about the human mind, the goodness, both sides, the devil and the tzaddikim who saved lives. So it was all printed by the State University of New York Press. I think I finished about an hour.
Thank you very much.
Don't thank me. Don't thank me. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And there's no end of tears. My oldest grandson, did you just want to ask something?
Yeah, just really quickly.
I couldn't hear well.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that you, in a lot of the more abstract paintings, you had birds. Like you portrayed birds?
You painted birds in a lot of the paintings.
You've had Germans?
No. In the paintings that we passed around here,
yeah.
These paintings, they're often birds.
And I was wondering if they're symbolic.
Some of them, the paintings are in my book.
I understand.
The illustration.
But what he's asking is, were the birds from your memory or were they symbolic of something?
You mean the birds? The birds was something which was to me natural. God's image of freedom, the jealousy. Why can't I fly like the bird to look at good and bad? Okay? And that's why I brought in the bird. They're a witness. They sang a song, but I didn't hear it. Yeah. So, my oldest grandson graduated the Hebrew University of Jerusalem with the highest honors. And he was invited, Jonathan is his name, and he worked as an intern in the White House with President Obama and two advisors for 4 months. You know that. Yeah. The middle one, David, is going to be a lawyer. The third one wants to be a businessman, but he's studying Talmud and